This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast, where we chat all things creepy, cannabis, true crime, paranormal, and weird. I'm Madeline.
I'm Rachel. And this time we're trying to just record me, because not everybody likes to be on camera, and that's okay. But I'm an attention whore, so I'm not one of those people. Before we talk about this, what are you, we're going to be talking about a convenience store murder, as well as, turn on do not disturb, not working, as well as a time I was robbed while working at a convenience store. But prior to that,
the strain that I am smoking today is called Sunset Octane. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it before. I'm almost certain that I have, but it is a sativa dominant strain, which I need right now. And it is a cross between Sunset Sherbert, High Octane OG, and BX3.
VX or Be Like Boy?
B.
Be Like Boy.
It is supposed to help you feel, like, uplifted and happy, inspired, sociable, apparently.
Oh.
And, yeah, it's usually about 22 to 30%, but this one is 25% THC, 1.24% myrcene, and 1.127 limonene. So, pretty, like, evenly balanced. Also has a good amount of linalool, which is also, like, pretty sedating and relaxing, so.
I think this will be a good test to see the uplifting effects, because obviously we're recording a bunch of episodes, and we've had some more indica-leaning.
Yes.
Stuff thus far, so yeah. We'll see.
But yeah, it's good for chronic pain, depression, insomnia, chronic fatigue, nausea, appetite loss, or chronic stress.
I mean, all of which I have.
So,
as usual.
There's that.
Well, guys, I don't know how, but I forgot all about this story for a long time, and then I was on my TikTok page the other day, and I was like, oh shit, remember that time you got robbed working at a convenience store? And I don't think I told the story on here before. And if I have, I'm sorry. You can correct me, but anyway. When I was 16, I was in the 11th grade. I got an evening job at a convenience store by my house. It was for the evenings. I want to say I ended up working usually like 5 or 6 until like 11 or 12. Hmm. And I only did it certain nights of the week because, you know, like I had school and stuff. But it was literally at the end of my street. So, like, I live on a residential street, and at the end was, like, not a main road, but, like, a more main road that, like, teed off, and right there was the store. So, yeah, my parents felt like it was fine because even at a slow pace, I could walk to the store in, like, 3 minutes at the time. So, like, in an emergency, they're right there. Anyway, the layout of the store is important for context. So I'm gonna do my best to explain it without, like, overdoing it. So it had, like, the typical glass front, like you would normally see on a convenience store, like, so you can see inside the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then in the center of the store was the door to walk inside. And then right when you walked in, the counter was to the left, and the shape of the counter was like an L that was closed in. So it went straight and then turned, and then you had to walk around and walk into it. So, like, not a U, it was an L shape, but it was, like, as if you could walk into it and have a counter in front of you and behind you. But there was only one way in and out of it. So you would get, like, bottlenecked into it if there was a person standing in the opening.
Okay.
So, anyway, that's, you know, where the register was. And then, so you walk in, that's to your left. If you look straight ahead, like, you're in an aisle, you can see, like, the milk and stuff. And then to the right were the aisles that were, you know, where all, like, the other stuff was. So, anyway, it's about an hour before we close one night, so pretty late. and I was mopping the aisle, so I was facing the register. So, like, my back was to some cold stuff. I was looking down and through those aisles. I could see the register and see the front door and, like, the front glass. It was a really small store. Mm-hmm. Smaller than a 7-Eleven. Like, it's like a little corner convenience store. So, anyway, my coworker, who, by the way, was pregnant at the time, she was counting money on the countertop to drop into the safe. So, basically, I want to say it was like every $200 we had over 50 in the register, we had to drop that money into a safe because mm-hmm. if you get robbed, like, there's a lot of money in the register. So she's at the counter counting it because we got really busy that day. Like, there was not even time for us to pee, let alone to drop that money and write up a deposit and do all that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, at one point I'm like mopping the floor and I look up and I see two guys coming up to the door, and I could tell they were two black men. I could tell they were younger, mm-hmm. like either teenagers or in their 20s from what I could tell. Like, I could see their faces, and they were wearing hoods, and I remember, like, it wasn't cold enough for how many layers they had on. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember, they're walking up in like a 10 second time span, and all these thoughts are happening in 10 seconds. I see the two guys, and all of a sudden, I don't know if you've ever had, like, a traumatic event or heard bad news where you, like, have, like, an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. For some reason, my head went completely, like, I couldn't hear anything but ringing in my ears. And all the hair on my body stood up, and I just got really, really uncomfortable as soon as I looked at them and saw them walking up. And no sooner than I had that thought, they both pulled a mask up over their face and walked in. And I was like, it was like, I think my brain knew before, or my body knew before, like, I made the connection that they were up to no good. Mm-hmm. And it is weird because you always hear people say that, but that really did happen. Like, before I even knew what they were there for, I was like,
yeah,
I'm about to get robbed. Like, it's gonna happen. I had to take my, like, put it in notes because I ramble. So they barge in, and I'm the type of person, I freeze in fear. So when someone else is in danger that I love, I usually can react, but definitely, for sure, if it's just me, I just freeze. I can't make words. I can't make thoughts. I just freeze. So that's what I did. I'm frozen. They barge in. Their backs are to me, and they don't see me when they come in. So from my angle, I can see their backs, and I can see their arms in a bent position, but mm-hmm. I cannot tell if they have weapons or not. But, like, it's bent like they're holding guns. Mm-hmm. So anyway, one of them stayed right by the door looking right at the register, because it was as soon as you walked in, the counter and the register were right there on your left. So he's standing there looking at it, and the other one, before my coworker can get out from behind there, runs back to the opening and pushes her in. That's why that's important. So he's got her blocked in there. She's pregnant. She's holding money, and he's screaming at her, pointing at her with his hand in his pockets like he's going to shoot her. And I'm just standing there, like, and before y'all get up in arms, like, that was all my body could do. Like, I could not, I was just standing there, like, okay, and whatever. I mean, it's happening. So, anyway, they're screaming at her to open it, and she's pregnant, she's terrified, and she keeps hitting the wrong buttons. And she's like, I'm trying, and he's in her face, like, he's in her face, and his elbow's up like this, and he's, like, pointing. And finally, I was like, you have to say something, or what if, like, he shoots her because she can't get it open? And so finally I was like, you have to push the so-and-so button. Like, and I just said it really quiet because I was scared I was going to startle them and I was going to get shot. Thankfully, they all just looked at me. So, like, simultaneously, the two guys turned and looked at me, and she looked up at me, like, horrified. And I think I repeated it. I think I was like, you have to push this button. And then the guy that, it's not funny, the guy that was facing the register that was now looking at me was like, who the fuck are you? And literally my brain was like, I just mopped the floors. That's what I said. I said, I just mopped the floors. Like, I couldn't think of words. So anyway, the guy behind the counter then was like, watch her, and I'm going to keep an eye on this one. And she pushes the button, he gets the money out, and she's like trying to just stay calm, and he's packing it all up or whatever. And then, thankfully, in our case, they took their money and they left. And I just remember immediately she ran out from the counter and locked the door and called 911. And I remember I called my high school boyfriend at the time. Yeah. And he literally was like, yeah, I don't care. Like, I'm not interested. And I was like, I just almost, like, was possibly shot in, like, a burglary, and I just wanted to tell you. And he didn't care.
Lovely.
Men are douchebags.
Lovely.
Sean would have cared.
Yeah.
But I called my parents. They were there really quick, thankfully. And so we didn't have to sit there by ourselves. Like, they were there before the cops got there. So a couple fun follow-up facts to the story. I reported for work the next day, which I shouldn't have even done, but I did, and was fired because we didn't drop the money in time, so they got away with way more money than they should have been able to get away with. Which, fair, but, like, I was 16 years old. I am sorry. Do you think that your money is more important to me than my life?
No.
Do you think so? More important to that girl than her baby's life?
No.
So, I'm pretty sure her name was Shannon. I don't even remember, but if you're out there, girl, hope you're doing good, because that was horrifying. Now, years later, I find out from a mutual friend that I was pretty good friends with growing up, a guy. He was like, I have something to tell you. Like, I don't want you to be mad at me. And he had been kind of distant for a few months, and I couldn't tell, like, why he was being so weird. And he was like, I know who robbed the convenience store. Like, I know it was these two kids in high school. They were high schoolers. They did not have guns, according to them. They just had their fingers in their pockets. Like, they were just pretending they had guns, but they came over to his house or school or something, and they were bragging about how they had robbed the convenience store. He knew I worked there. They were describing us. He was like, I was pretty sure it was you. He was like, but I'm still friends with them, so I didn't want to say anything. And then you'd be mad at me. And I'm like, at the end of the day, like, I was just grateful to be alive, and I was young. I didn't really give a fuck. I was like, I don't really care. But, like, ew. Why would you want to be friends with somebody who, like, is bragging about robbing two girls?
Yeah.
Like, young people.
Congrats.
But anyway, so that got me interested, and I was like, you know, we were very lucky, and it should be a testament to how gross the world is, because I'm one person on planet Earth, and I have at least 20 stories of times I was sexually assaulted, almost abducted, robbed, whatever. And I know, like, people get mad that we come so hard for men, but, like, we have to be afraid all the time of men. The amount of men that have done horrible things to me or people that I know literally firsthand. And it's just, it's not like I hate men. I mean, I'd be sucking that dick pretty often for a man's. But, like,
yeah, the worst thing a man has to worry about on a first date is it going to suck or be boring?
Yeah.
We have to worry, are they going to murder us?
Yeah, and I just wish people understood, like, and better equated the fear. Because at the end of the day, like, for them, it was literally a joke. They were like, well, we didn't actually hurt anybody. For us, like, we didn't know that. I had to sit there in fear for my life, mm-hmm. afraid that a woman who was pregnant was going to be murdered in front of my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was horrifying. And I've been through a lot of trauma and a lot of shit. And I've been through a lot of fear.
And you, like, lost your job.
Yeah, and I lost my fucking job. And then somebody on TikTok, they were like, why would you even, like, go back there? And I was like, and we're going to have to talk about privilege, because I had to. I needed money. Mm-hmm. To pay bills at my home. Like, we grew up in poverty, and we were very blessed. My stepdad really took care of us, and really, you know, we were able to elevate ourselves to a very comfortable middle class. But, you know, If I needed a car or needed something, like, that was me paying for it, not my mom. Like, that was predetermined. Mm-hmm. We do not have that lifestyle where you're getting generational hand-me-downs. So anyway, I was like, you know what? We talk a lot about really popular cases that get a lot of attention, but there are millions of cases of people that matter very much to someone who maybe don't get as much notoriety or just don't get talked about as much because it's a isolated incident or not a serial killer or not a string of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you know what? No, I just want to go ahead and look into just a convenience store robbery, murder situation, and take a look at the other side of the coin and how it can go sometimes. And, you know, one of our mutual friends, my husband's one of his best friends, the one whose wife is from Thailand, he actually worked at a convenience store where somebody was murdered in front of him as a teenager. They were shot, I believe, right in the chest, point blank, in front of him. And it happens all the time, unfortunately. Jesus. And that was this kid that they went to school with, I believe, who kept robbing places, and eventually that kid was murdered by a convenience store owner. And I remember everybody was, like, trying to boycott the convenience store because he was such a good kid. And I'm like,
he was robbing.
He threatened to shoot that store owner, and he said, okay, I bet. Okay. So anyway, today we're going to talk about a man named Arthur Virgil Shrum Jr. He went by Pete. He was born on June 28th, 1931 in Wise County, Texas. On April 28th, 1950, he married Mary Ann Keon in Texas, with whom he shared 3 children. He was a former sergeant in the U.S. Army who served in Korea during the Korean War. And following the war, he worked in the insurance business for most of his career. And the sad part is, in his later years, he worked as a clerk at a Diamond Shamrock gas station in Mesquite, Texas. And at the time of his death, which happened at the Diamond Shamrock, he was only a few months away from his final retirement. He was just doing something to keep himself moving, and...
That's tragic.
You know, just... And here's the thing. I'm not gonna be one of those people that was like, he was a shining light to society, like everybody says. I don't know this man, but he was just a man doing his job. Yeah. Who didn't deserve for this to happen to him, especially like this.
Nothing worse than dying at work.
No, like, truly, I can't even imagine. Oh, I didn't even think of it like that. Yeah. At least if you die at your work, it's, like, bougie and nice there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to die at a gas station.
No.
Well, I don't want to die at the hands of anyone, but... sorry, my back hurts. So... On Saturday, March 27th, 1993, 61-year-old Arthur Virgil Pete Shroom Jr., a convenience store clerk, attended to customers at the Diamond Shamrock gas station, and at around 11:20 p.m., he attended to a woman named Peggy Wells. She was a regular customer at the store, and she was just getting some gas for her car, but she forgot her purse, and she didn't have enough money to pay, so she ran back out to her car to get her other purse so she could, you know, pay for her gas, and he was fine with that because he knew her. During this time, the store was completely empty apart from Pete. And then another customer, who was 22-year-old Wayne Hampton, came into the store and just started chatting him up. They were just having a conversation. And then outside by the front door of the store, his accomplice, who was his younger uncle, 18-year-old Anthony Bernard Hampton, who was nicknamed Elmo, was waiting with a handgun. So meanwhile, his regular client is completely unaware. He's just chatting him up, and this guy's just out there with a gun. So while Wayne was in conversation with Pete, Anthony entered the store and snuck up to the side of him, drew his handgun, and then ordered him to hand over money and the register and whatever. And Pete cooperated the entire time. He opened the register. It had $18 in it. He gave him the money. And promptly, Anthony fired 3 shots at point-blank range. He was hit and fell down, and then Wayne and Anthony took the money from the cash register, along with a dispenser full of lottery tickets, and fled the store, which I'm pretty sure lottery tickets can be tracked, so you're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Then the customer returned as the robbers were leaving the store, and she was actually shot at by Anthony and received a bullet to the shoulder, but survived her injury. Pete didn't die immediately, but he did ultimately pass away from the shooting injuries. Peggy Wells, she was the only witness to the crime. She was shot twice during the getaway. She was actually unaware that she had even been shot, I guess, from the adrenaline. She said she didn't even feel pain. She just was like, oh shit. And she returned to the store and found Pete dying. She, unfortunately, was in shock, like, really bad shock, because she didn't realize she'd been shot, obviously, so her body was working double time to, like, shut that shit down.
Mm-hmm.
So she found him, left the store, and then drove down the street to get help. She just, like, couldn't put her thoughts together to, like, do anything in the moment. Minutes later, another customer came and found him lying there, but not dead. His wife... was a nurse, so he frantically, like, waved her down and was like, you have to come in here, and she started working on him while he called the police, but it was just too late. She couldn't bring him back at that point. And honestly, even if Peggy had called the police right from then, the likelihood is, because these people strolled up while she was driving, like, down the street, so they were there pretty quick, he probably couldn't have been saved. So, it's very unfortunate, but, you know, the only thing I do think about is, you know, he didn't die alone. I've mentioned before, but I had a boy I went to school with. We were friendly. We weren't friends, but he was friends with my brother. And he got into a biking accident speeding on his, like, little street racer thing. And he was, like, passing away. And a lady, I don't know if it was a person involved in the accident or just a passerby, but she stayed with him the entire time. So, you know, I just remember at his funeral, you know, them saying it really helped his mom out to know that he just wasn't by himself at the end. That lady was there, and she made sure, like, she kept talking to him and telling him, like, your parents are on their way, like, whatever, you know, things you say. Oh, God. It's hard, but it does, you know, I know that's a really big burden on the person who's finding someone like that, but I do always think about that. And, you know, for you, that's one incident that's going to imprint on you, but that's their last potential moments on earth. And, you know, being by yourself would suck. Yeah. Footage of the crime was recorded on two security cameras, which obviously identified the two killers. 2 days after the murder on March 29th, 93, television stations in Texas broadcast the footage of the crime in hope that members of the public would be able to help identify the killers. They did receive tips from viewers, and one viewer recognized Anthony's face in the recording because he had worked with him at a Garland trampoline factory for about 3 months. And obviously it was a viable tip because that is the person. Police continued tracking the suspects and interviewed their relatives, and a day later both men were arrested on murder charges. Each of them did give written confessions and surrendered to the police. Several of the family members lied to investigators about their whereabouts and were set to face criminal charges as a result. Here's the worst part of this whole thing. And if you're like me and you're an end spoiler, this is exactly, I knew this was going to be the reason, like, it's before I even read it. But his reason for murdering him was because he was frustrated that there was so little money in the register. That's it. He was so frustrated that he was like, I gotta shoot you. And I wasn't surprised to hear that at all. Like, I knew exactly when they were like...
As if it's his fault.
No, but I just knew. They were like, fucking children. They were mad. They were like, that's all we're gonna get. I'm mad. I'm gonna kill you. You're not gonna think about it. You're gonna end someone's life over $18. So anyway, but he said that was the reason. And also because he had seen his face. Both men were clearly unaware that they were being filmed. So, you're an idiot. It was also learned from the videotapes that just 3 hours before the murder, Anthony had visited the store and made a normal transaction. So they went in and scoped the place out, and it's clearly premeditated at this point.
Yeah.
Anthony's mother, who was 34-year-old Annie Mae Hampton, recounted to a jury how her son became involved in crime and claimed she lost control over him. In court, she recounted her attempts to help him, and she wanted to help but claimed she received minimal assistance, which sounds probably accurate, unfortunately. I know my mom had an issue. My oldest brother was always, like, leaving school, and they were like, you're going to go to jail. Like, you're going to jail. And she said, okay, but what am I supposed to do? I'm a single mother who's already living off of government assistance and already being told she's not qualified for benefits if she does the wrong thing at the wrong time. And now she has to miss the only work she can do to sit handcuffed to my brother because she's going to go to jail. So I'm sure this mother was reaching out trying to get resources, and the state was just like, fuck off until someone had to die.
Typically.
And that's the worst part, is like, this is just a kid. And I'm not excusing the behavior. You're 18, but I look back at me at 18. I was a fucking idiot. Even now, I can't regulate my emotions properly. Would I ever shoot anybody? No. It's fucking not acceptable. But I can't imagine being a mom and losing my child to them being a violent offender and just, like, the stress that comes with that. Anyway, Anthony Hampton and his nephew Wayne were both convicted of capital murder and sentenced to life in prison. They both must serve 35 years in prison before being eligible for parole. They were spared the death penalty despite prosecutors urging for it and calling in witnesses to influence a jury to call for it. And honestly, sometimes I think, A, the death penalty is too easy. Like, you should have to live with, like, the stress of your actions.
Yeah.
But also, when somebody is so young, I am grateful that... I just believe in second chances. I do believe that even violent offenders under the wrong circumstances, like, or under the right circumstances, can grow. We've all changed and gotten better. You know, I think people can. Maybe I'm just not an optimist. I don't know. The case was the first of only two death penalty cases tried in Dallas County in 1993. Prior to the murder of Pete, the duo were responsible for a number of armed robberies in the Dallas area, two of which happened the same week as his murder. Surviving store clerks who had been robbed by the Hamptons testified at their trials. So at this point, they're not getting off. Both men are incarcerated in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice system in separate facilities. Anthony is imprisoned in the French M. Robertson unit, and Wayne is imprisoned in the Alfred D. Hughes unit, and both men are not eligible for parole until March 30th, 2028, which will be the 35-year mark of their initial. So they've been... And we're coming up on that. Like, it's not too far away at this point. So, in pop culture, I mean, there was some notoriety because this murder was shown on television. It was shown on a television documentary. In 1998, it was a shockumentary film that was banned from television. But there was, like, some misinformation reported on it, and nothing reliable. You know how the media is. But Wells was interviewed about the crime on Real TV and described what he had witnessed, or what she had witnessed, Peggy. Mm-hmm. She was friends with him and a regular at the store, so she was interviewed, you know, because she was also involved in that capacity. You know, so I think they also interviewed his wife and kids. But, I mean, it's really nothing... Like I said, we do a lot of the exciting, popular stuff, and that's what gets viewers' attention. But it's important to remember that, like, we're all people on this earth, and there's so much crime that's happening, and I think it's really fun to consume true crime, and it can be a little heavy, and we all have, like, a weird obsession with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it starts... I hate to be this, like, hippie person, but it starts at the beginning. Like, get involved in your community. Get involved with people. Like, go to drives, donate food, donate time. Don't listen to me, because I just drove by somebody on the street that needed money and I just, like, didn't make eye contact. But that's because I'm fucking broke right now and I had no dollars to give. So unless he was going to give me his Cash App, like... But the point is, I live in a neighborhood that's pretty impoverished. I'm very fortunate, but the neighborhood itself, like, it's been a struggle. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, desperate people do desperate shit. And you don't want to excuse that, but I think we could all, like, open our eyes a little bit more to our neighbors and just, like, be a little nicer. Like, don't strike up a conversation with me because I'm an introvert, but, like, mm-hmm. I'll do a wave and nod.
You'll wave and nod.
And, like, I have a neighbor across the street, and it's, like, a couple. It's, like, a dad and his daughter and her boyfriend, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure because I don't talk to them. But, like, if they see somebody fucking around outside her house, like, they'll yell at them. And the other day, I was looking out the door with my goddaughter. And we look out and we'll say, hi, world, hi, tree, hi, car, and look at stuff. And he heard us and he started waving to her and, like, talking to her from across the street. And that was it. He didn't come over here and get my business.
Yeah.
He waved, he talked to her, and he went about his way. And that's, you know, I was like, my neighbors see me.
Respectful.
They're watching out for me. But we're not having, lunch. So, and I will say, too, like, I'm a huge fan of, like, see something, say something, but also safely. Like, I'm not getting involved in the moment. Like, if there's a gun out, I'm probably going to, like, freeze and fear like I did before and save myself, unfortunately.
Or, I think, like, you can get a gun now if you have a medical card.
You can?
Well, there was an Oklahoma case that the Oklahoma Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional to say that medical cannabis patients can't bear arms, because the right to bear arms is the most important right. Pretty much.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that.
The logic is all wrong.
It's flawed. However, the logic that being is all said, wrong. And look.
But I will benefit from
gun control is a hot topic. So I want to be, you know, we all have our own opinions on that. That being said, I will admit that where I live, it is a dangerous area. And, you know, I am very...
It's too late in the game to say no guns. I'm sorry, but...
they're here. And what my are you thing gonna is, do? Like... I definitely, for sure, like, I hate the thought that kids can't go to school without being afraid.
Yeah.
But I do feel, in my personal opinion, that the people that are getting guns illegally are going to keep getting them. That's going to keep happening, regardless of the laws, because they're already breaking the law by murdering people with them.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't have a gun anyway because of Sean's criminal history. So we've just already expected that we're gonna have to die in the apocalypse or do melee weapons. And I don't know if you've seen me play Fortnite, but I ain't it with melee weapons.
I ain't it.
Even with a hammer. Shockwave don't matter. You're not dying. I ain't killing you. That's all I have to say, so.
Okay.
Bye.
Oh.
Oh no?
Bye.
Bye.